This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross. Our first guest, actor and writer Sacha Baron Cohen, is famous for taking his characters into the real world and interacting with people who have no idea they're dealing with a fictitious character. He's done it with his characters Ali G, a hip-hop wannabe and clueless TV interviewer, Borat, a misogynistic, anti-Semitic, and all-around clueless man from Kazakhstan, and Bruno, an Austrian gay fashion reporter who comes to America and is, of course, clueless and incredibly inappropriate. In Baron Cohen's latest movie, The Dictator, which comes out on DVD next week, he plays General Aladdin, the tyrannical ruler of the fictitious North African country Wadia, and he travels to Manhattan to address the UN. Terry spoke with Sacha Baron Cohen last May when The Dictator was in theaters. Here's a clip from the film. The clueless dictator is in a health food store run by an environmentally dedicated young feminist, played by Anna Faris.
Anyway, let me give you the grand tour. Up on the roof, we've got this amazing organic garden. And...
Boring. Do you sell any assault rifles?
Oh, wait. I got it. Humor, right? I took a feminist clown workshop once.
Help, help. I'm trapped under a glass ceiling.
I wasn't the best student, but...
You seem educated.
Yes, I went to Amherst.
I love it when women go to school. It's like seeing a monkey on roller skates. It means nothing to them, but it's so adorable for us.
Sacha Baron Cohen, welcome back to Fresh Air. Thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Thank you for having me back, Terry.
So this is the first time that you have a character who comes to America and it's scripted. You know, Bruno's come to America, Ali G's come to America, Borat's come to America, but that has been... your character coming and actually talking to real people who didn't know who the characters were and didn't know that they were, you know, made up characters. So what are some of the differences for you? First of all, why did you do this as a scripted film? My assumption would be because it was unsafe to do it any other way at this point, between how famous you are now, more people are in on the joke, lawsuits, you've risked your life in other films for the joke. So I assume that's among the reasons why this one's scripted.
That's it. And the biggest one was a creative one. We actually just thought we could make a better movie if it had a script and, you know, didn't involve real people. I think pulling off a kind of fake documentary of me being a, actual dictator would have been extremely difficult, if not impossible. Because, you know, we got away with it on Borat because Kazakhstan was a real country. So you could say I'm from Kazakhstan National Television and people would look up Kazakhstan and it existed. But if I came this time and said I'm from Wadia, they'd, you know, look it up and realize it didn't exist. And if I said, listen, I'm the dictator of Turkmenistan or, you know, or Libya, they could look it up on Wikipedia and realize that I'm not. So it would have been impossible to, you know, have this real story.
So
it had got extremely dangerous. Bruno, I remember towards the end, you know, we loved the experience. But I did say to the team, you know, at some point we've got to stop because you can only be so lucky. And we'd been incredibly lucky. We were very close a lot of times to, you know, sustaining real injuries. And not just me, the crew as well, you know, there was a lot of kind of very violent situations and we were antagonizing a lot of people who were armed, which we hadn't really dealt with in Borat. But with Bruno, we felt that because he was sort of more of an unlikable figure in a way, that you would have to put him in slightly more dangerous situations and situations of homophobia, you know, and... In a lot of places where we were dealing with homophobes, a lot of those guys were armed. And so it became, you know, we were very lucky that there wasn't really a problem.
Well, I can definitely see why you're doing scripted movies now.
Yeah.
In the don't push your luck
category. I do miss some of the fun. I miss a little bit.
Well, it must be so weird not to have, I assume, like you have permits to shoot on the street and you might have police protecting you as opposed to police trying to arrest you. That must be a new feeling for you.
Yes. I mean, there was a time... You know, I got so used to the police turning up. You know, with Borat, I think they came about 45 times. There was sometimes it was the police. Then the FBI were following us for a while. They thought that they had so many complaints that there was a Middle Eastern man. And this was Borat, who was supposedly from Kazakhstan, a Middle Eastern man driving through America in an ice cream van that the FBI assigned a team to us. So we had the FBI and then we had the Secret Service. But there were so many of these instances, and with Bruno as well, that for a while, it would take about 6 months afterwards for me not to totally freak out whenever I saw a policeman. And so it was totally bizarre shooting the dictator to actually have cops protecting me. It was quite ironic. I mean, a lot of the cops loved it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there was one time during the filming of the dictator, there's one shot where we were just driving down the street and I suddenly saw a bunch of police around a hotel. I said, all right, wait a minute, stop the car. And it turned out that Ahmadinejad was staying at the hotel. And I said, all right, great, we've got to shoot something here. And so basically Ahmadinejad's convoy arrived. And I, you know, it's a bit of the movie where the dictator is down and out in New York on the street and no one recognizes him because he's had his beard shaved off. And so I was there shouting, you know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, it's me. I've still got your tennis shorts. What are you doing? It's me. Aladdin, where are you? You know, my friend, let me, I sleep on your floor. You know, you are my doubles badminton partner. Why are you not responding? Anyway, the police were so scared. They all were fans. And they were, you know, they were saying, listen, please don't ruin this for us. We've got, you know. They've asked, you know, the Iranian government have asked us to look after Ahmadinejad. So, you know, if you cross the street, we will have to arrest you. So there's a shot in the movie that we use. You see me surrounded by five cops, and those guys are real.
And they and they didn't arrest you.
No, they didn't arrest me, but they made it clear if I was going to cross the road that they'd arrest me. So, and I've got this thing where I can't get arrested in America, otherwise my visa then becomes sort of taken away from me.
So one of the things you stay away from in The Dictator is religion. We don't know if this dictator is Muslim. There's no mention of Islam. There's no mention of the Prophet Muhammad. And that's a good thing, I think, because I don't think it's – I mean, Muslims are very offended by anything that parodies the religion, but also especially it's considered sacrilege to, you know, parody – in any way the Prophet. Did you intentionally try to avoid that so as not to be misunderstood, so as not to insult people who you had no interest in insulting?
Exactly. I mean, firstly, again, he's not an Arab dictator, and he actually says that he isn't in the movie. And so we wanted to really ensure that he was not Arabic in any way. So we created a new language. I say that, but he actually speaks at times in Hebrew.
Like
which
Borat
would be strange for an, which would, exactly, which would be strange for an Arabic dictator, and we created a new alphabet, which was actually a form of Manchu, which is a dialect, Chinese dialect, and we wanted to make sure the architecture was, you know, not exactly Arabic as well. So we wanted it to be Arabesque, but have the influences off Africa and other dictatorships as well. And in terms of the religion, yeah, you know, he's not a Muslim. His religion is himself. You know, he's turned himself into a demigod. You know, and also we wanted to really make it clear, particularly after the Arab Spring, that this was in no way a parody of Arabs. This was a parody of people who oppress Arabs and people who oppress other people around the world. So that was kind of really crucial, you know, for me to, you know, put out there to show that, you know, that we do support, you know, the rights of people to be free, whatever their religion.
Do you get any criticisms from Hebrew-speaking people for using Hebrew in your movies and passing it off as the language of the oppressor or the language of,
Well, when during the premiere of Borat in Israel, they had a screening, and about two-thirds of the way through, somebody shouted in the back row, you know, Umadabevrit, which means he's speaking Hebrew. And at that point, the whole audience erupted in applause. You know, I think they loved it. You know, mm-hmm. The irony, I do like the irony of Borat, a deeply anti-Semitic character, speaking Hebrew, and this guy who's deeply, you know, wants to annihilate Israel, is also speaking Hebrew.
So the movie is scripted, but in promoting the movie, you did things that were just in character. And this was really hysterical when the Academy Award people, I guess it's the National Academy of Arts and Sciences.
Yes.
When you were told that you couldn't show up in character for the red carpet, you did a really hysterical video in character in your full dictator regalia with your virgin bodyguards protecting you. And I'm going to play the clip of, we'll just hear the audio of that video that you did.
Good morning, great Satan of America. How are you? I am fine, thank you. On behalf of the nation of Wadia, I am outraged at being banned from the Oscars by the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts, and Zionists. While I applaud the Academy for taking away my right to free speech, I warn you that if you do not lift your sanctions and give me my tickets back by 12 p.m. on Sunday, you will face unimaginable consequences. Furthermore, it is an act of aggression that no Wadian films have been recognized by the Academy. Where are the nominations for such classic films as When Harry Kidnapped Sally, You've Got Mail Bomb, or Planet of the Apes? On top of all of this, I paid Hilary Swank $2 million to be my date, and she will not refund a penny. My Sunday calendar is now as empty as a North Korean grocery store. But whatever happens, I still plan to attend director Brett Ratner's after party, since it's impossible to catch herpes twice. Death to the West, death to America, and good luck, Billy Crystals. You're fantastic. How was that? Did I sound crazy enough?
That's Sacha Baron Cohen in character as the dictator after he was banned from the Oscars. Why were you banned in character?
I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you why I was invited. I was invited to the Oscars originally because I did this movie, Hugo, with Martin Scorsese, and the movie got nominated for a few awards. And so I think it was quite an unprecedented thing that the Academy essentially banned me from coming with a beard on. And
this was to the red carpet and to the Oscars?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I was not allowed to come. So
could you have come as yourself or just not come in character?
They said I could come as myself, yes. But the dictator was not to be dictated to. So, but the head of the Academy called up my agent and threatened him. And it became kind of like a, you know, semi kind of mafia-like threat of, you know, if I turned up within half a mile off the Oscars, he said that I would be arrested by one of the 250 plainclothes FBI officers that were, you know, under his command. They said that there would be repercussions for my career in Hollywood, that I would, you know, there'd be repercussions for the film Hugo. And so I issued that statement.
But you defied the Academy. You actually showed up in character as the dictator on the red carpet. How did you decide to defy them?
Well, they actually capitulated. I mean, I put that video out saying that they had until 12 o'clock. And it was obviously it was a kind of jokey threat, but they actually gave in and they handed me back my two tickets.
Okay, so what you did was you were talking to Ryan Seacrest, who was doing, you know, the red carpet stuff. And you know, broadcasting from the red carpet, and he was interviewing you, and you explained that you had Kim Jong-il's ashes in the urn and that, like, oops, you accidentally spilled them all over his beautiful tuxedo jacket. And I think you've explained that the quote, ashes were actually flour, you know, baking flour.
Yes, it was flour. And I was showing him that the irony that the urn was actually made in South Korea. And so I lifted it up, and it spilled on him.
So I kept trying to put myself in Ryan Seacrest's shoes because it was a very funny stunt. And at the same time, I was thinking, like, God, this is like his big night. It's almost like, you know, in the movie Carrie when she's like, she's finally like, she's prom queen. They like her after all. And then she has the pig blood spilled on her. Did you worry that, like, you were going to ruin his night and maybe the flour wasn't going to come out of the jacket and he'd have to be on, like, global television with a stained jacket for the rest
of
the evening?
I think that's why it was flour rather than something that could stain, and that's why it was something that you could really brush off. And also, that's also the reason, you know, I was, you know, sitting with my co-writer and we were saying, you know, who do we spill it on? And we only came up with the idea the night before. And you know, we thought, you know, do we do it on Clooney or Brad Pitt? And I thought, no, we can't do it on them because that really is their big night. You know, that is, you know, Hollywood is celebrating them for the, you know, their achievement in movies. You know, really the journalists on the red carpet are just there to, you know, talk about what suit you're wearing and what, you know, and promote various fashion labels. So to cover a suit that was given by a fashion label with a bit of flour that could be brushed off, we thought wasn't really such a terrible thing. And also after the actual event, I sent him a new jacket that was identical with a little label inside which said made in the Republic of Wadia by child slave labor.
Any regrets about anything that you've done in character that looking back you think did cross a line and was maybe like hurtful in a way you didn't want to be or inappropriate in a way that you didn't expect it to be?
There's always a discussion before anything is done. It's, you know, me and my co-writer or, you know, there can be co-writers and we sit around and discuss the morality of a particular act. You know, is the subject worthy of, you know, having an hour of their time wasted? Or, and if something worse is happening, you know, then, you know, for example, the hunters in Arkansas, when I'm Bruno and I'm coming on to them, you know, and being flirtatious with them, which really isn't such a terrible thing. If a woman was being flirtatious with a man, I don't think a man would get extremely upset. He might blush. But so there was no real logical reason why a man being flirtatious with another man should get a man incredibly upset unless that the subject exhibited some deep-rooted homophobia. So, you know, when it's something like that, we do always question the morality. And, for example, if a woman was pregnant or, you know, there was somebody who was poor or somebody who was undeserving, you know, I'm certainly much more reluctant to do anything, and those people would be ruled out. And, you know, if you look at the Ali G show and you look at generally the people who I interview, they tend to be white, wealthy, powerful males, you know, in positions of extreme influence.
So in addition to your movie late last year, there was Hugo, Martin Scorsese's movie, which is based on a book about, you know, a children's or young adolescence novel about the rediscovery of the very early filmmaker Georges Méliès. And I'm just thinking what it must have been like for you to not only be in character, but to be in somebody else's character. It's not a character you created. It's not something you have a lot of control over. And also you probably have to do a lot of takes, as you would in any movie, not only to get it right, but just to get, you know, get it from different angles, which the film director will need, you know, coverage. Do you have the patience for that, since you're so into, for lack of a better word, you know, like guerrilla filmmaking?
Yes, I did. I mean, part of the reason I agreed to do that movie was I knew that I was going to make The Dictator. I knew it was a different genre. And I knew I had to learn how to make a real movie. And so I said, you know, Marty, if I make this movie, do you mind if I sit by your side and ask you a variety of inane and, you know, often idiotic questions about how to make a movie? And he said, fine. And I ended up sitting next to him by the monitor, watching how he directed.
What's the kind of question you asked him?
Well, I would ask basic stuff, like, because there's so much improvisation on my movies, you know, because it's a scripted movie, but we, you know, we improvise a lot. So, you know, we do a couple of takes that are scripted and then half an hour of improvisation. So I said, how do we make it an interesting shot? And he said, well, you know, I said, how do we get any movement to the camera while we're improvising? Because often comedies can be very, very static. And he said, well, he goes, you know, there's a method that Kurosawa uses, which is you put two cameras, you put them on sticks, and then you put them on dollies, and then you keep on moving them around. And so he, you know, he knows every movie that's been made since the beginning of cinema, and actually in every continent. And he's memorized every single movie. So it was incredible. He was giving me incredibly obscure movies to look at, and to which inspired me for the character in Hugo and inspired me for The Dictator. And I kept on asking him about it, and also asking the other people on set how I would, you know, I basically abused everyone on set and abused the fact that they were sitting ducks for 6 months.
Well, Sacha Baron Cohen, it's been great to have you back. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me back. Thank you for letting me speak for so long.
Sacha Baron Cohen spoke with Terry Gross in May. His movie, The Dictator, is out on DVD next week. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.